Next on the pod, we have head coach of the Whitworth Pirates baseball program, CJ Perry. We talked a lot about baseball development and specifically weight room development. We talked a little bit on the culture side. We talked a little bit on the recruiting side. So it's a little hodgepodge of everything. And hope you guys enjoy. And also, keep listening to the end because we do get into some pretty fun topics here at the end of the interview. So without further ado, CJ Perry.
CJ.
Welcome to the pod. CJ, how long have you been with the Pirates?
10 years. As an assistant and then as a head guy. Yeah. And I played there before.
And so. 4 years as a player.
So yeah, 14 years.
It's a lot of years.
A lot of years. That's all I know.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit about your career, like as a player, and then kind of dive into the coaching side of it.
Yeah. I'll be really brief on my career. Because
don't be.
It wasn't that good.
Brack.
Not a great career.
Boast.
But no, pitched at Whitworth for 4 years, like started three of those years. 2012 was the best decision of my life. I decided I want to be a pitcher only.
Nice.
So
you didn't really.
Stop making a fool of myself in the outfield and made that move, and it was a good one. But yeah, got down at Whitworth, and then I was the assistant coach. I coached pitchers for 5 years. And then, yeah, been a head coach now for just finished my fifth season.
Well, awesome. Talk a little bit about also, I know you do strength stuff within the department at Whitworth.
Mm-hmm.
So could you speak a little bit about what you do on the strength side as the department as a whole and maybe a little bit as on the baseball side specifically?
Yeah, so my title is strength and conditioning coordinator, which is more of like a consulting education role. So my job is to kind of like teach our head coaches to be their own strength coach. So like if they need help with lifting demonstrations or periodization or programming or anything like that, like I can kind of go in there and help. I also work with sports medicine a lot too. So it's like if we see, you know, 14 soft tissue injuries with some team, it's like we can kind of go in there and talk about it and see if anything is problematic with, you know, volume or the timing of what's going on or any stuff like that. So it's a cool role because I don't have to be in the weight room for 14 hours a day like a regular, like, foot on the ground strength coach. Mm-hmm. But I'm certified to kind of do that stuff if I wanted. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good segue into a question I had for you. I'm also really interested in the strength side of things, trying to get my CSCS right now.
Nice.
Do you have yours?
I
Is that
do,
something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you recommend?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. So, yeah, kind of just like speaking with Schwarty and Kyle and just what we've kind of seen in our 5 years as players, just like this drastic change in kind of the importance of strength in baseball as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And just on the team. And I think when we started, it was kind of this idea that just being in there more was going to get us more. And I think, you know, a lot of programs might fall into that when they're kind of scrambling to catch up in terms of, you know, getting their program a solid weightlifting, you know, regimen. And so my question for you is, what kind of like advice in terms of volume, intensity, frequency, what guidelines would you, you know, use to prioritize gains and also health?
Mm-hmm.
And how do those change in and out of season?
Yeah, so I think that to answer that question is like, I think you have to identify what you want to be good at in the weight room, right? So like, how are we going to measure the strength aspect? How are we going to measure the power aspect? How are we going to show guys on a regular basis, hey, what we're doing is working and you're getting better at it? So, you know, it's just like with anything, pitching, hitting, whatever, it's like you kind of have to have KPIs. Everything else falls under that umbrella, right? So I think you have to identify what's important to you. So like whether that's picking, you know, three or four lifts that you're emphasizing, right? Obviously like compound lifts that you believe translate best to showing strength.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have some sort of KPI that demonstrate like how that strength is expressed, right? So like a vertical jump, 10-yard dash, something that shows something on the other side of the force velocity curve, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you kind of need to have an interaction both or both to be able to be effective. and outside of that, like I think all those things, right, you kind of have to talk about like what the work economy or the training economy of your player is based on where they're at. Yeah. So, you know, you can push those strength KPIs harder in the off season, where maybe you're a pitcher that's shut down for, you know, two weeks to 2 months. Like, that's a great time to put that, you know, put that in that mm-hmm. training bucket, train that. You know, for hitters, it's a little bit different because it's like you guys can, I mean, you can swing a bat all you want,
so much volume.
But maybe like, you know, in that off season where your volume of swings might be less, you can do more med ball work or something more rotational. So you're not kind of like overloading those guys. So, it's just, you have to identify what you want to be good at. And then you have to identify the times of year where your guys are getting less volume, with like movements in that area, and then load that appropriately.
Gotcha. Would you say that you use, would you say that the focus changes to more of a power maintenance, power gain in season to kind of combat maybe some overwork kind of injuries, chronic use injuries, things like that, as opposed to maybe in the off season loading a little bit more to maybe, you know, improve some tissue resilience and things like that? Is mm-hmm. that kind of a change of focus in and out of season?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point. And in season too, right, from a programming standpoint, it's way easier to program like max strength power exercises mm-hmm. because those aren't going to make you sore.
Right.
So it's like we can get a guy in the weight room and we can do trap bar jumps at whatever at a really high intensity, give mm-hmm. them full rest. They're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, we can do 10 40-yard sprints, right, with full rest, and they're not going to be sore. Granted, they did stuff in the off season, right?
Like, right. Yeah.
But so like all that stuff, yeah, like maintaining max strength, and power, and then your hypertrophy and your volume and all that stuff kind of takes a back seat, because yeah, you're trying to elicit like that power and max strength response while you're in season, because it's just easier to monitor and easier to screw up, or not as easy to screw up. So
yeah. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
cool. Well, I'll kind of transition this here. I mean, obviously, and you can kind of like follow up on this question, but Spokane is pretty far away from everywhere else at the conference, right? Like,
sure.
That's kind of a grind of a schedule. And I know these guys would talk about, and I guess you can kind of jump in here and I'll kind of paraphrase it, but it's kind of like a rallying cry for the Pirates, right? Like mm-hmm. coming, you know, as far away as you have to drive and come and compete every weekend, where every weekend it's a pretty aggressive road trip.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you
want to do. I mean, one thing I always think about was the squad that you coached in 2019.
Sure.
Which, like, to me and Brad as players, just an absolute juggernaut of a team.
We probably should speak for general.
Tell the story.
So 2019, if I'm not mistaken, we were supposed to drive from in Forest Grove, Oregon, so near Portland area, up to Spokane, which is roughly 6 to 8 hours on a bus.
Yeah.
And there was anywhere between that. But and it was snowing like crazy mm-hmm. up in Spokane,
yeah.
So we could not play up there. So the Whitworth Pirates come to Pacific to play a home series at Pacific. So we are the away team in our own yard.
Mm-hmm.
After they had probably not practiced as frequently as most teams that were south of them and had gone on a massive bus ride, they came into our yard and absolutely mopped the floor with us to a degree that was impressive to watch and be a part of. So we, Ryan and I, as players, when we were young, that left a mark of what the Pirates were about and how they didn't really care about how long they had to travel. They didn't really care about where they were going. They were ready to kind of come in and kick your butt, and that was kind of their motto.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love for you to speak about that, if that was actually what we had if we just imagined it or if it was real, because it stuck with us.
Yeah, so I think, another side to that story was we couldn't get a bus, so we had to drive vans.
Unbelievable.
Wow. So we had three, like, you know, 12-passenger vans that we were driving down, and that's a separate side story to that, because it was just so late when we moved the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we're, you can obviously take bad circumstances or like not ideal circumstances and twist them kind of however you want. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can whine and complain about it, or you can make the best of it and kind of
move
on. So our situation, like where we're at, where it is a little bit colder, it's also drier, right? So it's like you get some good windows of January, February practice, but there's always snow that could roll in and screw up the next 2 weeks for you. So for us, our job is just to make sure that whatever our situation is, our guys accept it and just kind of say good and roll with it, right? Like, mm-hmm. snowed 6 inches last night, good. Guess what? That means we're going to get more swings inside. We can isolate some things maybe that we want to work on. Great. Like, we take that, use it to our advantage. It's a good day. It also just kind of removes any excuse that you have. One of my favorite days of the year is when we get outside and it's 30 degrees. And, like, we have a clear turf, and that's fine, right? But it's kind of like, hey, guys, like, this is our hour and a half window to try to get better today.
Yeah.
You can make the most of it, or you can just kind of, like, let it go by the wayside. But it's like, this is what we're given, and we have to maximize it.
Yeah.
So we kind of use it and kind of think, like, yeah, we have that chip on our shoulder all the time because, you know, we as coaches want to build adaptable men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, what better way to do that than with, like, being a Division III athlete and going through the student-athlete experience like you guys – you know, freshly off of.
Yep.
And you probably don't want to practice outside in 30 degrees.
Yep.
You know, and at the time, that sucks. And it's awful. And you're diving all over the yard, and you're sweating, and then your sweat is freezing, and you're freezing even more, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, at the end of the day, you know, it's like, that's what you're given. Like,
yep.
For better or for worse.
That reminds me of the quote that Kai told us when we met with Kai talking about the difference between all the levels that he's been a part of, from Division III to the Major League level. And he said that the first thing he noted was it was consistency, was those guys are just far more consistent than the average ball player, which, of course. But he said that Division III ball players have a knack about them. And his words were, I know that Division III baseball players are more willing to punch a grandma to get where they need to go. Meaning they'll do whatever it takes because they've been through the nitty gritty.
Sure.
And that, if any team has really been through that, it's the Whitworth Pirates, I would say. So that's awesome. I love that. That's great.
I hope there aren't a ton of grandmas getting punched, though.
No,
not actually.
It's a problematic situation. So we're not saying that that's okay. We do not condone grandma punches.
He was saying you would do the worst possible thing more often than the other guy to get where you need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're dogs, so.
Kind of from like a practice planning standpoint, because obviously there are a lot of coaches in the country that are, you know, their preseason is in bad weather places where it's too cold or it's snowy or what have you. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of them are balling on a budget. What are kind of some strategies? You don't have to go crazy micro, but just kind of some general principles and strategies that you have for indoor practice.
Mm-hmm.
And how you guys maximize that time while you guys are kind of in those adverse weather situations.
Yeah, so I think for us it's a really good time to teach. You can be a little bit more isolated in your skills, and you can have a focus where it's like, maybe you're just talking about like base running and primary and secondary leads or jumps off the left-handers or whatever. But, you know, as you guys know, like for us, there's sometimes if like basketball's practicing and the bleachers are pulled out, like we don't have very much room to work. So it's like, let's like kind of take a minute and isolate some things that maybe we haven't spent enough time on that guys need some efficiency with or some practice with. And then the tail end of practice, like let's make sure that we're playing game speed and we're competing and we're going at it. Right. So like, I think you just have to find a way to make the practice environment a little bit more challenging, like whether you're using a machine. Mm-hmm. One thing we started to do last year, which I really liked some days and really hated other days, was like pitchers would throw their flat ground to a hitter. So like we'd get in there and let's say, you know, Joe is, his emphasis is like, well, I'm really trying to throw my slider early on, you know, like glove side or whatever for strikes. Like, what a good opportunity to put him in there against the hitter, even though he's still going at like 70-75%.
Yeah.
You tell your hitter, listen, like, we're facing so-and-so this weekend. Like, we're probably going to see a lot of early breaking pitches. Yeah. I want you to hunt that pitch.
Cool.
Right? So, like, it takes a little bit more kind of orchestration on the front end of it, but it's also like, hey, we can use this to this guy's benefit. We can use this to this guy's benefit. And, you know, we might as well do it while we have 2 hours back here and trying to get better at it. So, I would say that's efficient sometimes, and then it's really inefficient other times, depending on how many cages you have and like catchers you have and stuff. But I think that's a great way to do it. The other thing is just like any sort of scrimmage off of a hack attack indoors, whether you're doing like a two strike drill, you know, you're doing a barrel competition, even if you just have like a coach back there saying like, oh yeah, single runner on first base, you know what I mean? Like
any sort
something,
of
something to kind of take the monotony out of indoor practice. So. And the other thing I would add to that too, something we found like recently is like, you know, it's easy to get bored in indoor practice. So even if you take like the smallest change or tweak in a game or a competition or something, like we have a deck of cards that we use sometimes for scrimmage situations where it's like shuffle the deck of cards, you pull a card out, like the hitter, it's like, let's say it's a 1-1 count with a runner on third base, nobody out.
Cool.
And you have to go in there and you have to execute.
That's cool.
So just stuff where you can like gamify it, right? And like you guys can get up for it and be excited about it, even though you're inside for the 14th straight round.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I got a follow-up question about the flat grounds with kind of live hitters. Do you, I know obviously competing in practice is like one of the best tools you can use. Do you ever worry, because you said, you know, asking your guys to kind of go 70-75%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is it ever a struggle to kind of have them buy into, like, we get, you know, you're playing your boys, you want to get them out, you want to hit off your boys. Like, how do you kind of explain that to them in a way where they can buy in and obviously go at the, you know, intensity that you are kind of looking for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think just knowing where that flat ground day is within the context of a weekly workload, okay, for most guys communicates that. So, right, you know, most of these guys will typically bullpen Tuesday, Wednesday, midweek, and then these guys are doing this kind of flat ground work like Thursday or Friday. So even if they do decide that they're kind of want to like let the dogs out a little bit and like rip a couple, they're still going to be fine.
Right.
But the way we kind of like tweak it and make it is like, hey, yeah, competing is important. Don't get me wrong. Right. But like, this is where we can really isolate a skill. You can get feedback from a real hitter, and we can get some sort of real feel with the batter in the box of like what we're trying to accomplish or what we're trying to do. So yeah, sometimes it works awesome, right? Mm-hmm. Guys understand it, like they know why they're doing it. Other times it's awful because guys will go in there and they'll get roughed up and it's like, well, coach, like, you know, I don't know how my sliders were today. And it's like, well, let me talk, you can rephrase it. It's like, okay, so you're working on slider command or whatever, depth on the slider, whatever, right? It's like, if you go in there and rip 7 good sliders, even though the hitter's probably hunting that pitch,
right,
if you executed your pitch, it's probably not going to be pieced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's probably, it might get hit, right? But you kind of have to read the context of like what that hitter is telling you what it's doing. You know, just because it got hit doesn't mean it was hit well.
Right? Exactly.
Right? And he knew it was coming. So it's like, you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt. So
it's a good mindset.
Just like, so prefacing what success looks like in that drill is important.
Right.
You know, like, hey, this is what we're after. This is our goal. We can't read so far into like, oh, well, I didn't get any swing and misses off of it. Because it's like, well, he knows it's coming,
right?
You know, so it's like, that sucks, right? But it's that wasn't really why we're doing it.
Yep, that makes sense. I really like that mindset.
I do too. I think that's great. Like, obviously, not being a pitcher, but like being able to have a guy not square you up when they know it's coming. Like, it's tough. It's really tough to say that's my version of success, especially when you kind of flip the roles in terms of hitting and pitching, and like the hitter knowing obviously what's coming. So I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, CJ, as a coach that wears many hats in the baseball world, as in training, weight training, as a head guy, pitching guy, my hot question for you is, if money was not an option and you could buy one piece of equipment that you think would benefit your team the most, and only one, what would it be? Take your time. It's a big question.
That's a hard question. It is a tough question. J-bands.
100 sets.
Money's
we'd never run out.
Never have an issue.
And it can't be like a stadium.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure,
all right.
Sure. I think I would go with, I don't know what the brand is, but there's a type of machine that you can basically program like sequences in.
Oh, those are so cool.
Yeah.
Those
so, you, I mean, so you can cool. have like, you know, you could say, hey, I want fastball changeup at random.
Yeah.
You know, like in this quadrant, like whatever.
And the spin rate and all that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I think that would probably be close to the top of my list.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Not really similar on topic, but another question nonetheless.
Okay.
We've talked in the past about how we can manipulate baseball like showcases and tryouts and recruiting events to best represent the athletes and their skill sets. What are some like quick things kind of off the top of your head that you think we could easily transition or like change to make you know, baseball showcases and things like that to be more effective for the recruiter and for players to market themselves as athletes?
I think like one big idea is fewer teams and fewer athletes. So I think overall numbers and like mass of an event is fine, but there does become a point where it just gets kind of diluted and watered down, right? So I think like fewer events throughout the course of the year in different regions of the country is kind of like where I'm, if obviously nobody needed to make money off of this, right? Like that's kind of how I would kind of picture it being.
Sure.
And honestly, like I think recruiting a lot more, not that I'm like, oh, I wish things were the way they used to be, but I really do like kind of miss the team aspect of recruiting, like recruiting tournaments and like, you know, American Legion playoffs and like that kind of stuff, because I think those type of events don't necessarily like you can highlight tools in those events, but it really does kind of like tell you a lot about the kid and how he works within the context of a team that he's close with. I think a lot of the times when we're evaluating kids, tools are important, don't get me wrong, but you really do kind of miss that in the dugout presence of like knowing other people, because we all know like when we have recruits on campus and stuff, right, it's really easy to shake a hand and look a guy in the eye and be nice to your parents when a coach is staring down, you know, like looking at you from across the table, but maybe the kid's in like not that way all the time. So it's like putting a kid in an environment that's familiar to them, where similar to where they would be in a college environment, right? Because you spend so much time with that kid that you kind of want to know who they are, like as a genuine person, and if they would be a fit from that standpoint too.
Yeah.
So I guess like just going back to a model of like familiarity, where the kid has played with the team that he's played with before, understands like the system of what the coach is about, and can implement that system or adjust like from system to system, which I think is kind of interesting too.
I do have a somewhat difficult question for you.
Okay.
So obviously last year didn't work out the way you guys would have hoped as a team.
Amen to that.
And obviously there's a lot that goes into that, including like tough injuries and things like that on the run. But as a coach, I mean, a lot of podcasts were obviously interviewing and kind of pumping up a lot of coaches and kind of loving each other up, and a lot of positivity is flowing. But in a season where you have like a negative result, what goes into like preparing that next season after having like a pretty strong culture of success?
Yeah.
And what are some strategies that you know you're potentially going to use here, as well as like other strategies you think other coaches could leverage?
Yeah.
When faced with kind of an adverse season.
That's a great question. So I think it forces you to audit your systems, right? Or like your processes or what you're doing. And so for us, it's a lot of like sitting down and kind of looking at the things that made us successful, and kind of comparing that, you know, like for example, that 2019 or a 2020 team versus a 21-22 team. And kind of understanding like, okay, well, what are the differences that the student athlete is experiencing? What are the differences that the coaching staff has experienced in that 2 years? Because, you know, I like coaches, right? We like things to be efficient and easy and linear, and human beings and coaching a team are far from that. So I think we need to take a look at our processes, why they made it successful in the past, and then why isn't that successful anymore? And then maybe not like losing... you know, for us, like I'm kind of thinking of like a player led program, right? So like, you know, having a fully autonomous unit on the field, that where you're as a coach, you're basically removing yourself from having to micromanage everything in the game, because your players understand what's happening. They're well prepared. They can make decisions in real time. But you know, it's like for us, like maybe our guys, because they haven't played together a lot because COVID year, or come from high school programs or other programs where they might have not gotten that much freedom, maybe that's a concept that's a little bit more difficult for them to grasp. So we don't want to lose that area of it because we know it's made us successful, but we're going to change the implementation of that. Maybe we need to do more teaching, right? Maybe we need to spend more time in scrimmage situations and replicating situations where guys can fail aggressively and we can learn from that. Like kind of keeping the bones of what made you successful, but you're obviously going to have to some years get there in different ways. You know, as your leadership changes, as your personnel changes, as your coaching staff changes, like, you know, kind of navigating that and that turnover and what that looks like on a year-to-year basis. I think, you know, throughout all the misery, you you kind of learn, like, okay, what are we doing is obviously not working, and that's refreshing because you don't really, you know, it's kind of like a point of return where you're like, well, mm-hmm. we're not doing very good, so, like, let's get to work. Like, let's try and figure this thing out. And you, yeah, you just, it's the kind of that stage where it's not just random experimentation, but you're trying different things and you're, like, kind of allowing yourself a little bit of leash to fail. And I think there can be a lot of good from that, despite kind of, like, not feeling good about, like, your team's performance or your win-loss record or your performance as a coach or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 It's good.
I have a quick follow-up question. Me and Brad were actually talking with our roommate about classroom sessions, and so you brought up teaching as something that, you know, do you use classroom sessions? Are you a fan of that? Is that something you do before practice and then instantly go out? Is that a different day? Do you feel like you maybe you lose some of it if you don't go out right away? Like, what does that look like? What do you think is kind of the best way to teach, but also, all, you know, not lose sight of, you know, people are visual learners. They like to get out. A lot of baseball players want to
work.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't use classroom sessions very often. Kind of the things that we've used classroom sessions before are maybe giving the guys of, like, why we're doing lifting the way that we're lifting, right? Mm-hmm. Or bringing in a sports psychologist and having them talk to the guys and do classroom sessions or something like that. When I talk about, like, teaching, I'm more talking about just, like, hey, we're on the field, we're in our baseball stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of those things that I think as coaches we assume kids know, right? Yeah. Our knowledge as coaches gets better every year.
Yeah.
The 18-year-old kid that's coming in,
his
knowledge doesn't grow with yours.
Yeah.
And so as you kind of go on and on and on, you can lose track of, like, those things that kids need to be educated on. You know, like, we talked with my coaching staff, like, this year we're going to do just something called baseball school with our guys.
That's awesome.
So it's like, hey, if you were to get a high school, you're 22 years old, you walk across the stage, you get your Whitworth degree, and you're coaching at, you're the head coach now at Mead High School. Like, could you run that baseball program?
That's awesome.
Like, could you drag the infield, right? Like, could you run a practice with, you know, 25, 16 to 18-year-old kids and, like, teach them what they need to teach? So just kind of being, like, exhaustive in the fact that you're not assuming they know anything. Your job is to educate them in base running and pitching and hitting and situational awareness and whatever it happens to be. And kind of taking pride in that aspect because, to be self-reflective, like, that's something that I've really lost touch with year after year because you're always trying to streamline stuff, right? Like, you're always trying to make stuff easier for you. And I think for me personally, that's something in that, like, audit that I kind of was like, oh, man, like, I need to do more teaching. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, more coaching, more kind of just back to basics, elementary fundamental stuff that we take for granted.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for any coach to look back on.
Yeah,
right when a year ends, whatever the result may be, it needs to kind of, a reset button has to be hit kind of every year at some point, whether it's big or small. You have to get back to fundamentals and really get some things down, like relays, cuts, base running, basic leads, whatever it may be.
No doubt.
And it's, I mean, these are kids too that are coming in to play college baseball. They're 18-year-olds. They're now just men, so some of them don't have a full grasp or understanding of the sport of baseball yet to its fullest. So I love that.
But you constantly want to be, like, iterating on your systems, right? Like, if you, even if it's really easy to do too, like, when things don't go well, right? But, like, in seasons when you do see success, like, continuing to iterate on the systems that have already made you successful is sometimes hard to do, especially, like, when things are going well. I just agree wholeheartedly with just no matter where you're at in your career or where you're at, from a program standpoint, like, continuing to make things better and taking an audit of the program and really looking at what you can do to better it. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
There's a lot of words to just say I agree with CJ and Brad. Brad, I know you had, like, a pretty fun question since we've gotten
to so here. I know, like, we always just kind of look back and, you know, obviously – D3 baseball has some interesting quirks about it, to say the least. Do you have, like, your most D3 game experience as a player and then as a coach? Any, like, doubleheaders that started at 7 p.m. in the snow? Anything kind of crazy like that where you're just like, we are here, we have arrived.
We know ours.
Division III baseball.
This is when I was playing. I was a sophomore. We were playing Menlo because they were a Division III school at the time. And our bus driver, eccentric dude,
Okay. The bus was from like probably like, you know, 1960, like Shag carpet runners.
Yeah.
Had like the little doilies hanging down from the baggage stuff, right? So he, you know, he picks us up at the airport, takes us to our hotel next day, right? Like, he takes us out to the field. When he comes back to pick us up from the field that day, though, there's like other people's stuff on the bus.
So it was like a
you know, San Jose State women's basketball. Like, he'd obviously just taken them somewhere.
Okay.
Dropped them off. There was stuff, bag tags, like stuff in the bus. Oh, where we're like, also, he's not like, so he's not just shuttling for
he's,
us.
He's double dipping. Yeah.
Yeah, he's trying to, you know, bang trying to pay, pay the bills. So, anyways. So takes us back to the hotel, right? Sunday, drops us off. We fly out Sunday night, obviously, from San Jose. Game ends, bus isn't there. So,
yeah, head coach. Saw this one coming.
Yeah, head coach is calling, like, can't get a hold of him, whatever. We've got like an hour and a half to get to the airport. And so the Menlo coaches are like, okay, like, let's do this. Like, we'll.
That's awesome.
Get our trucks. Throw all your stuff in the back of the truck. We'll just make as many trips as we
good
can back like, to the airport.
Good on Menlo.
Good, great on Menlo.
Shout out Menlo.
Shout out
yeah.
Oaks.
Yeah. Menlo Oaks, circa 2009, 2010.
Love
them. But yeah, like, and so that was just one of those deals where it was like, and you know, Coach Ramsey told me like a good deal amount of time later that guy like completely overcharged him. It was some ridiculous, like, it was like $5,000, right? Like, for like a bus rental or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, we're not going to pay that. Like,
yeah.
one of those deals. So that, I think that one, like, that one for me was like, not like this is so D3, right? But just like one of those deals.
It's a college baseball experience.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. You're not a power school. You get the treatment every once in a while.
Breaking
down, or
for sure
going to play at Blue Mountain when the field's frozen.
Yeah.
Like that.
What
are you talking about?
Yeah, our fearless leader.
It was a fun trip.
Seventy bags of Turkish later and a blowtorch. Yes, it was.
I was going to ask, is that your guys's?
Yes. So
that's not mine. But
that's mine.
No.
So for those, so we went to our JV, our freshman year, we were on the Red Wave, as we call it, but the JV program, and we were going to Blue Mountain Community College, and it was our first, I think it was our first road trip as a team. Was it?
It was our second game.
Yeah, so as,
like really, really.
As you know, freshman in college, this was our first trip to go play, and we go to Blue Mountain, and it is snowing on the way there, and Tread tells us before, he's like, we don't know if these games are going to happen, but we're going to go for the experience. Just to, like, get there and, you know, you guys can say you traveled, hang out in a hotel, like, experience that a little bit. It'll be a good time regardless. So we get there. There's, like, a decent amount of snow on the ground, and we're just loving it. We're, like, we're young kids, and this is awesome, and we're about to play college baseball. Maybe. We didn't know. So the next day, we wake up, and it is... Like, there's still some snow, but it is so cold. It is frozen. Everything is frozen. We're in the middle of Pendleton, Oregon.
Shout out Pendleton.
That's where Crowd's dad grew up. Shout out Todd. So it was frozen everywhere.
And we get there,
and we can't barely move. It's so cold. And we're like, we're not playing. There's no way.
I'm throwing BP. And they're holding down the cage with just one single tire. Right? The cage is not like
we're next to a prison.
Flying through the wind, and I'm like throwing BP, and the ball is moving.
Like,
the
dirtiest
stuff I've ever had in my career. And the tire finally flies away, and I'm like, all right, BP's over. And so we just sat down and waited for the game to start for like half an hour.
Which we didn't think was going to start still.
Yeah, there's snow on the field.
And then Coach Brad...
Baker. Shout out Coach Brad Baker.
We love Coach Brad Baker.
One more.
Goes and just starts unloading turfus. Bag after bag after bag. And we're playing on a beach. And we played two games.
Oh, we got ran.
And lost 40-something to zero after two games.
And an obliteration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so cold, our shortstop could not... Yeah. Throw the ball to first base every time he
finished. Any play he was on the run was an instant airman.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
So that was the worst, best, and biggest D3 moment of my life.
My biggest one was the 7-inning triple header against Lewis and Clark a couple years ago.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That was awesome.
COVID season.
Regardless of result, like, it would have been so great to just play three games in one day, seven inning games, just back to back to back.
Yeah.
Just a D3 grind fest.
It was.
There's nothing better.
Yeah.
Nothing better on earth.
The sweep helped, but it was crazy. It was it hurt.
Yeah, by the end of the games, it was like the scoreboard lights were lighting the field because like, we just weren't getting the game over with.
Yeah.
It was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good experience. But
do you have one, Kraut?
Yeah, mine. I don't think either of you guys were there, actually. I was my freshman year, so my first road trip. We head out to Wawa conference series against the Blues, and it's very cold.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a theme here. But we show up, and I remember waking up in the Holiday Inn that morning, and Bills was like, yeah, we're going to push the game, the start of the double dip, back to 4 p.m. I was like, okay, that's pretty late.
Whitman has lights.
They have lights. Right? Okay. They do have lights. And I remember thinking, okay, that's pretty late. So, I text my grandma and grandpa because they live out there and let them know. And they're like, wow, that's double dip starting there. Okay. And then we pushed it back to like 7 p.m. because there was snow on the field. And so having talked to some of the Blues now, they were shoveling snow for like hours and hours before the start of the game. So we're out there, lights are on, 7 p.m. I remember standing behind another freshman who was from Santa Clara. He refuses to wear sleeves, and it's snowing during the national anthem. And I remember thinking, I better lock in because we have 18 innings starting right now.
Yeah.
Second game didn't start until about like 11 p.m., we probably left the field around 1:30 or 2.
Didn't one of the games go to extras? I was laying in my bed watching,
that was,
and it like went to extras, and I just closed my computer.
Yeah.
I'm just like, no, I'm good.
We had a player hit a fly ball that was just absolutely camped under. I remember running to second base, and all of a sudden the left fielder looks up, and it's 30 feet over the fence. Like, no doubt homer, just so far gone. And yeah, so I was like, wow, this is awesome. This is the Wild West.
I was when the grind started.
Yeah.
Good story.
Unbelievable.
Do you have any questions for us? Any bangers just sitting at the top of your head there?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I do have a question for you guys. It's not related to baseball or anything.
Awesome.
Question for the group. I want to know what the most underrated animal is.
Oh, dude.
God, I love it.
I like that you were underrated instead of overrated.
Yeah.
Underappreciated.
What's yours so we can like...
You have to have one. You didn't just think of this question.
This.
If you did, that's actually unbelievable if you just thought of this question.
I have a lot of random questions. There's an underrated animal. I'm going to go with the crow.
The crow. The
crow gets a lot of bad rap.
Okay.
But
what's... What's good about the crow, CJ? What's good about it?
I mean,
hear him out.
Okay. It represents death.
Yep. No. So
maybe that's the
point.
Okay.
So the point is, get rid of all of your preconceived notions about the crow.
Okay, it's gone.
Represents.
Okay,
but how many like dead animals have we seen on the side of the road that
they're
not picked up by somebody else? Like they're picked clean by crows and
good
to go.
Good turn.
Cow manure.
Okay.
Facts. Deer.
Okay.
Whatever's there, they'll eat it.
All right. Then I'm sticking on the theme. I'm going to go bumblebees.
Oh,
and here's
underappreciated.
How's that on theme? And second, how are they?
That they do for all of the people.
Okay.
So we have the sanitation force of nature. And then
it's the, the pollination.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love honey.
Yeah.
And look at it. God, do I love honey. So, and people get mad about bumblebees because they're like, oh no, dude, I'm going to get stung by a bee.
Most people know that we need them to live, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, but most people still want to kill bumblebees when they see bumblebees. Or at least swat them away, which becomes a very dangerous game.
Okay.
Right? So I just think that bumblebees, though they are starting to be rated higher, still underrated because of how important they are. Plus, I'm fat and I love honey. And that is my take. And honestly, like, I was having a tough time grabbing an underrated animal. So, Brad, your turn.
Grasping at straws. That's okay. That was a good one. Do you have yours, Kraut? I think I have one.
Go for it.
But okay, mine is going to be bats.
Oh, nice.
That's a good one, right? Because mine, especially with COVID and stuff, they got a bad rap there. Everyone's scared of them. Like when they see them. I don't like seeing them, especially in the daylight. Kraut, you know this.
Mm-hmm.
But they eat a ton of bugs.
Does that mean?
We were coaching camps, and there was a bat out in the daylight, and you kept messing with me all day, thinking, "Oh, the bat's in your hair," but you know.
Oh right.
Yeah, you can cut that part out. This guy sucks.
Yeah, I'll definitely edit that.
Yeah, definitely edit that. No, anyway, bats. They eat all the bugs. They're just around eating at night.
Also, to add on to that,
yeah,
their bat guano fertilizes coffee production. Mm. Tropical climates.
Wow.
I actually learned something brand new.
So and that's what the podcast is for.
Yep.
And also, Batman may be the most underappreciated superhero.
Yeah. I mean, he's just a rich guy.
Well, he mm-hmm. has no powers, but he's a grinder.
Sure.
He's a D3 guy. No duels.
Yeah.
But wanted to be a part of the team.
Hey, he competed with Superman, though, in that movie.
He sure did.
No one could believe it.
That's Cap.
Yeah. Okay. All right, you're Cap. All
right. I'm going to go with pigs, and hear me out.
Yeah, nice.
I think this kind of wraps it all up.
In bacon?
What do you do? Easy.
Okay.
What do you do with your leftover scraps? If you got pigs, you just give it to them.
I usually just eat everything.
Oh. The bear.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. But yeah, I'm going to go with pigs. Some people have pigs as pets. They're very friendly creatures at times. Yeah, pigs.
Okay.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. That was a good one. Yeah.
All right, I want one more. This is good.
Yeah.
Me on
another, you want another question?
Another question. On this I think, see, we're going to have to be texting CJ pretty frequently for questions.
Yes. So another random one. Doesn't even do baseball.
We love that.
Okay.
It's karaoke night.
Oh, no.
Oh!
The teleprompter breaks.
Oh.
So you've got to go your karaoke song without the words, and you're trying to get 100% on the song. 100%.
So it's like, gun to your head, so get the song right.
You got to know the song.
Let's get it.
Inside and out.
Okay.
What song are you singing?
I have to know it. I mean, Wheels on the Bus is a cop-out.
Well, no, yeah, no nursery rhymes. Okay. Like, none of the stuff that all of us know. You know what I mean? It's got to be like a song by a musical artist.
Okay. Tread, go ahead, dude. Which?
The Whisper song by the Eagles. I'm just kidding. Probably Write This Down by George
Strait. Oh, that's a good one.
I think that's what I'm doing.
That's excellent.
You go ahead.
Well,
I just heard
Tread and I actually belted this in the kitchen earlier today.
Oh,
I mean, we went off.
It was
we harmonized. I'm going to go, That's What I Love About Sunday, Craig Morgan.
It's a good song.
Oh, you guys are picking country.
Country's
good.
Well,
country's the best category for karaoke.
Yeah, but it's like...
You're going to pick a future song and just rap the whole
thing. Yeah, no, you can't pick a... But if you pick a rap song, it's like, wow, that was impressive.
Great point.
Mm-hmm.
But also, dude, you go three verses of a rap song... at a karaoke thing.
I'm out of
people are just going to be kind of...
I'm going to go with Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Get you off some vocals.
And it just gets everybody going. Everybody can sing along with me, so even if I'm like,
mm-hmm.
don't know what word that was, they'll sing it for me.
I look forward to the day that you go hard in the paint on the Bohemian Rhapsody.
I'm all talk. I can't. I wouldn't actually do that.
We could use that as a punishment for.
I like karaoke as a punishment.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, good. We're doing. Anyways.
Well, CJ.
CJ.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Great first guess.
Yeah,
perfect.
Thanks.
Absolutely perfect.
Absolutely electric. So thanks for being on the show, and maybe we'll have you on the show again down the road.
Part two.
Three years from now.
Yeah, dude, we'll circle back.
Let's circle back.
Revisit the anniversary episode.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, CJ.
Thanks.